Season 2, Episode Number 23, I Choose to Forgive My Father. Summer is upon us, y'all. June 21 to be exact. And Target has made these items to make your summer a great one. This week, Target is featuring new swim trends along with stylish rompers and jumpsuits. And listen, Target is also featuring sandals for the whole entire family, starting at $3.99. And lastly, you're going to get a free $15 gift card when you spend $75 on baby essentials. This is what you want to do. You want to check out the Target shopping link either on your mobile right there in the show notes, or you can head on to keepit100girl.com and you're going to look for episode number 23 on the podcast page.
You know, I never got the apology or anything like that, but I just decided to forgive. So I could let it go, right, on my end. But I can't even send a happy Father's Day to him or...
To this day?
Yeah.
So welcome to another edition of the Keep It 100 Girl podcast. This is a show where Nina and my guests share their 50 shades of cray-cray, plus all the lessons learned. So look, this is how we're all going to keep it 100 in 2018. Every week, trust. I am unapologetically myself. And you guys are too. No filters, judgment, or boundaries when we talk. That's what Keeping It 100 is all about. It's real, it's raw, and it's all grown. We women and men tell the truth, nothing but the truth, even if it's totally embarrassing or super cray-cray. So I'm your host, Nina Babel. Are you ready to keep it 100? Are you ready to keep it real and true? Are you ready to keep it 100?
Ready to keep it 100, girl.
Oh, Nina, I keep it 100, baby.
Yes, I'm ready to keep it 100.
I'm ready to keep it 100, girl.
You know I'm going to keep it 100.
In today's episode, we're giving a shout out to all the shits. You heard me. All the shits out there who call themselves fathers, daddies, deadbeats, no good role models, and absent poppies who just wouldn't get a DNA test. Yeah, I'm keeping it 100 right here. But for the record, my dad is not included in this pile of caca. He was the best dad ever, one that I miss dearly with all my heart. And as my girlfriend put it, she didn't have a dad growing up, but if she was ever to ask for one, she's like, my father would have been that person. In this episode, you're going to meet a son who chose to forgive his father, despite him not being there 100% of his life growing up. So he's going to share the feelings of embarrassment that any boy would feel missing out on that father-son relationship. Look, a dad is a son's first hero and a daughter's first love. So in this clip, Alan talks about his upbringing. Mostly, it's centered on his mother and his father separating, and then him becoming that quote-unquote man of the house at an early age, when clearly there is no father figure present.
Well, I was raised by immigrant parents. My mom's from El Salvador, my dad's from Guatemala. So my first language was Spanish, and I learned English just kind of hanging out with some kids and a little bit from Sesame Street. but, you know, as happens, when I was around 9 years old, my parents divorced. My dad left, and it was kind of a interesting break for me, as far as when he left, he kind of left us for a bit, right? He was more enthralled in the new relationship and in a little bit the new family. And so that kind of left a bit of a void. I became the quote unquote man of the house at 9 years old, right? I didn't know what I was doing. And just kind of had to step up and take on a few more responsibilities to help my mom out you know, because she was working a couple jobs. We were quite poor growing up, and so just kind of having that on my shoulders, I think I look at it now almost as a blessing, just because it's given me some of the drive that I have now.
So let's go back for a second to being the man of the house at 9 years old, compared to being a father of two and also being the man of the house. I asked Alan to share the differences and similarities between the same but different people.
Yeah, there's definitely quite a difference. You know, I thought I knew a lot back then. I guess that happens, right? The younger you are, the more you think you know. And, you know, back then I felt a lot of responsibility, and I think it was a lot for my age. But seeing now where I'm at, and I was talking to my wife about this the other day, there's some things that I'm going through with my children now that just, I used to be angry at my dad for not being there for certain things. I think that anger's changed to sadness for him that he missed out on certain things in his children's life. And part of that's because I chose to forgive him, whether or not he was sorry for the way it went down or what went down or anything like that. You know, I never got the apology or anything like that, but I just decided to forgive so I could let it go, right, on my end. And that's allowed a lot of space in my heart to do a lot of other things, because that used to really consume me. And it doesn't mean that I don't feel any anger sometimes. You know, there's some Father's Days where I'm not having it. I can't, you know, I can allow my family to celebrate for me and stuff like that, but I can't even send a happy Father's Day to him or,
to this day?
Call him. And it depends on the year. And I don't know what's triggering it or not. Some years I'll say, hey, happy Father's Day. Just send him a quick message or give him a call. And other years, you know, I talk to my wife a lot about stuff. She's my emotional, like, backdrop where I can just throw things at her. And she'll say, hey, you know what? That's okay. Or, no, you're kind of crazy. Let's work through it. And so, you know, she's always really good when I tell her I'm really angry this year, and I don't know what's different. I just feel like that triggers that thought in you. And so I just tell her, I don't feel like calling him. She's like, that's okay. She's like, that's part of what he chose when he did what he did. And, you know, you can call him a couple days later. And that's usually what happens. I'll call him a day or two later when I've chilled out and it's, I guess, not triggered by that day. Not that there's, yeah, you know what I mean? It's kind of, you look back on it, you're like, that's silly. It was just a day, but I guess it's what it means.
So now Elle and I reflected on those empty, lonely moments. When you're in public situations where people are talking about their father, whether it's at school or the water cooler. And then we've kind of incorporated the conversation about having a place of forgiveness and understand the place that you're coming from and the place that you're headed in terms of forgiveness.
Well, so like this year, I'm good. This year, I'm not feeling any of that kind of stuff. I think last year was a rough year, and I don't know what it was, but I feel, and I feel like I forgive him because I don't sit there and wish him ill. I don't sit there and lament over stuff, but it doesn't negate the fact that there's still those emotions and the events that happened, right? So for me, it's, even though I forgive him, to me, the forgiveness is I can't wallow in it and keep that in self-pity, but there's still reminders of events that happened, right? And so it's, you know, if you got in a car accident and somebody chopped off your leg, you can forgive that person for whatever, for causing the accident. Doesn't make your leg grow back, right? So you can still see it. So you can still be sad about it and think about those things. Just need to take a moment, work through it, and then come back out the other end. So that's kind of how I see forgiveness, is that it doesn't take away that, like, that forgive and forget, I think, is a wrong nomenclature for what we can do, because you have to still, you've lived it. You're not going to forget that. But I think that it doesn't have to be impeding your roadway of life forever, right? You might have a couple stumbling blocks, but you can just keep going.
So in this next conversation, we've been talking about triggers. Alan said, you know, one day he is fine, but then it just takes a trigger or an emotion that leads to an unwanted emotion. So I asked him to share some scenarios. I asked him to identify those triggers and how he manages through it.
As far as with my personal relationship with my dad, not really. I can't pinpoint exactly what it is that on one year makes me upset or another year doesn't. But when I see something that does get me is when I see men trying to just kind of overpower women in, not in like an intellectual, you know, argument, or, but just kind of being that machista guy, that sets me off, right? I'm not big on, hey, because I'm bigger and stronger, I'm going to get my will over you. Perfect example, back when I was younger and still dating, you know, several years ago. you know, I was out dancing with some friends, and I was just dancing with a girl. She wasn't like a girlfriend or anything like that. We were just dancing, right? And this guy comes up and grabs her arm and tells her, hey, you know, we got to talk. And I'm looking at her like, and she goes, I'm really sorry. I'll just finish dancing with him this and take care of that. Well, he starts twisting her arm, and that set me off, right? So I don't even know this girl, and I just walk up and I tell him, you know, you got to let go. Now, he could have kicked my butt or whatever, right? That part didn't cross my mind. It was just, I can't sit around and watch that happen and do nothing, right? So, pardon me. So for me, stuff like that is more of a trigger, like the big respectful kind of things. And there's probably some that stems back from my childhood and both in how I was raised and what I witnessed, that kind of sets that off for me. But I'm very big on not having that kind of stuff go on around me. Like, it's not going to just happen because I didn't do anything about it.
So part of the Keep It 100 experience is sharing what you saw in the home, right? We want some real and raw details that explains those lonely moments, that explains those moments where you had to take charge, those moments that made you uncomfortable. And I asked Ellen, for our 100 tribe, what are those typical experiences that happened in the home that made him uncomfortable?
Only one time that I can vividly remember. I'm sure it's probably happened more times, but I remember that I can tell you why that one's triggered. When I was younger, as the divorce was kind of coming up, I remember my mom was saying, well, I'm going to go get a job then so that I have, you know, or she was going to leave. I don't remember what it was exactly that they were arguing about. And I remember my dad pinning my mom up against the closet and physically holding her there. And I had woken up because it was either really late or really early. I don't remember. And all I could do, because I was this skinny little kid, way different than I am now. But, you know, this skinny little kid, and I was crawling up my headboard, just kind of trying to crawl up that wall backwards because I didn't know what to do. And I was scared and I couldn't go help because I felt helpless, I guess. And I think that that's part of what triggers that now, that I can't stand that, right? It was just that one event that sits vividly. And I honestly can't tell you if that happened more than once, where I witnessed it. I'm sure it did. Like, you don't just go and like do that one time and then it never happens. So I'm sure it existed, but I'm sure my mom kind of kept that from us, or they kind of hid it or whatever they did. But I remember that moment vividly, and I never wanted to feel that way again, that I couldn't help somebody when they were being, whether it was my mom or any other woman or even a man, right? I just didn't want to feel that way ever again.
Typically, our parents give us advice and tips as we're growing up. So I'm wondering, Alan, where did you get your knowledge on manly type things like learning how to tie a tie, how to dress, how to shave? These bothersome conversations weren't there. So who is this go-to to learn all of these things? So growing up, he wasn't the YouTube generation, and nor could he afford to have a desktop computer. So let's learn how Alan was able to learn all these manly type of things.
Growing up, I'm old enough that there wasn't YouTube and stuff yet, you know, or if it was, we didn't have a computer and stuff like that. But I didn't get one until I was in college. And so there was a couple really good men in the neighborhood that like taught me how to tie a tie, like for church and stuff like that. You know, and there was like the Boy Scout program, and there was two in particular, Keith Christensen and Tyler Skank, and they would take turns because I have a brother too. And as soon as he was old enough, they'd take turns, whoever would take the one as like the surrogate dad, cause they didn't have kids, you know, they had little kids or whatever. And so they would kind of be our surrogate dads on these little yearly scout trips and stuff like that. Pardon me. But it was also really cool that, you know, so that was part of that. Part of it was just seeing what I didn't want to emulate in my life. And, you know, the best advice I ever got came from the last person I thought would give it to me. As far as marriage goes, and that was my dad. And, you know, he was saying, look, I know I've messed up a lot. I know I've, you know, been married a few times and this and that. But let me tell you, while you're with your, she was my fiance at the time, right? Well, you guys are lovey-dovey. Everything's perfect. Agree to not fight by cussing each other out or, you know, kind of set these boundaries while everything's good, because you're going to fight. He's like, it's inevitable. Everybody is going to have arguments. And he's like, I think that this is in my relationships where it's gone wrong is that we just cuss each other out and say mean things to win. You just got to escalate every time to more and more and more. He's like, if you guys can set that boundary up beforehand and keep to it, he's like, I promise your marriage will be better. And I'll tell you what, it really has worked. You know, Michelle's my wife. Michelle and I don't ever like fight like I see other couples fight. You know, we get into heated debates and arguments, and that's not just semantics, right? I'm not trying to make it sound pretty, because sometimes we leave quite angry like everybody else does, but we never, ever cuss each other out. You know, and the first couple times when something ever slipped or whatever, it was, whoa. We said, we're not going to do that. There's no personal attacks. The fight would cut right there. I'd go downstairs. She'd stay upstairs. Man, our house was the cleanest it ever was. Because we just, you know, kind of mumble under breath and kind of clean things up until we cooled off and then came back up. And we're able to kind of rehash, even if we were both still upset about whatever it was. But it never really crossed the boundaries. And now, you know, you get into the first few ones and you want to win, but we were able to use that advice and cut it before it turned into anything big. And now we've trained ourselves that that's just not what we do. And it's, I'll tell you what, for whatever he ever did on the other end, I will always be grateful for that advice from my dad, because it really, really, really has put in good things into my relationship with my wife and allowed us to have like a much stronger bond.
Join Airbnb when you see the link www.airbnb.com/C as in cat, / N, BABEL. That's N as in no, B as in boy, A as in alpha, B as in boy, E as in elephant, L as in love. You will receive a credit. And this credit will automatically apply towards your first reservation with Airbnb. This credit will show up automatically on your checkout page of any Airbnb reservation worth $75 or more, excluding fees and taxes. So you know what? Take advantage of the Airbnb credit and happy travels, whether it's with or without Dad. So Alan talked earlier about never receiving an apology from his father. So I was just wondering if there was something when he was younger that he was seeking. And it might be an obvious question to some, but I'm asking because who wouldn't want an apology? I mean, isn't that something you just long for so that you could mend and move on? So I asked Alan what was going through his head.
When I decided to forgive, is that what you mean? Or just the whole gamut?
All these years, you're fantasizing about get this quote unquote apology that you never received. And I'm just wondering if the forgiveness became like the timing of the forgiveness. Was it like, okay, in order for me to stop wishing and hoping, I just need to forgive and then in a sense forget because you just want to move on with your life?
Right.
Or was it just you kept waiting and waiting and then disappointment, and just decided maybe to move on, you're getting married and you know, you're having a family, just can't dwell on that negative energy anymore.
You know, I had this really awesome teacher I was talking to, and we weren't talking about, like in his class, it wasn't anything about families or anything, but somehow it kind of routed to this in normal conversation. And he told me, you choose to be happy. And I remember thinking, that's easy for you to say. You're a happy white dude who has plenty of money and a family, and they're beautiful family, and you guys are perfect. You know, and you just kind of get these ideas about people. I don't know if his family life was perfect or if they went and cussed each other out every day, right? But in the pictures he had in his office or at his desk, I guess, they looked perfect, right? I had certain misconceptions about race and about what that did as far as holding you back or allowing you to succeed at that time. Just kind of in that pity party, allowing everything that I saw as an advantage for him to cloud my view of what he was trying to really tell me. And you know, he just said, you choose to be happy. He says, you don't have to love the situation you're in, but it's the situation is there. And you can either choose to accept it and try to find joy in it and change what you can, or you can be miserable. And it took a couple of years to kind of really kick in, but for some reason it stuck with me. And so for a while I woke up thinking, okay, I'm just going to be happy. I'm going to fake it. I'm going to smile. And then it just kind of became who I was. I was happy. It didn't mean that crap wasn't going down. I was still poor. I was still having issues with my dad. Even some issues with my mom, right? Because when you're a kid and you go through that, you can't totally decipher, quote unquote, whose fault it is, right? You're just kind of mad at the world. And so, honestly, my mom probably got the brunt of it because I was mad and my dad wasn't there, right? So, so I remember going through that, and then I started becoming more happy. And another thing he had told me is, you can choose to forgive at any time and don't have to give an apology. And I thought that was the biggest load of shit ever I had ever heard. Right. And, but as I started to work on, and it was years, right? Nina, I don't want you to think that it was just overnight that all of a sudden magically it was like, oh yeah, okay, I'll be happy and I'll forgive him.
How long did that process take?
Till it became less fake, if you will, probably about 2 years. 2 years, somewhere in that 2-year mark, I did just become the happy guy again.
Alan spent several years not being happy with himself, with his father. And you know what? Then he just started working on it. And it took a total of 2 years where, you know, he really saw a big change, or the efforts of what that big change was finally coming to fruition. So I asked Alan to share that 2 year journey with us.
I spent several years after not being that happy. And then once I started working on it, it was about 2 years where I really saw a big change. And I remember thinking, holy crap, hey, wait, I'm happy. And I woke up happy. And I didn't have to fake happy. And I had happy moments, right? There was birthday parties, there was girls, and there was this, and there was that. But I wasn't genuinely to the core happy. And in about 2 years of saying I'm going to choose every morning to be happy, and it, all of a sudden I remember thinking, wait, I'm not faking this anymore. I'm not trying to tell myself to be happy. I am happy. And then that allowed me to say, okay, I want to forgive my dad. And that tasted so horrible in my mouth to say that, right? Because I didn't want to. I didn't. I wanted to be angry at him forever because of what he did to me and my family. Right? That's how I saw it. And, you know, I read a book or something. I don't remember what it was, but somebody said, you know, hating somebody is like drinking poison and hoping that they die.
Yeah.
You know? Too. Yeah. And I wish I could attribute it to who said it or wrote it, but I used to read a lot. I still read a lot, but I used to read a lot. I think that's where I masked my pain, was just getting away in books. And so I remember coming across that, and it really made sense to me. It put it in something I could visualize. Like, yeah, he's over there having fun with his new family and doing the thing, and I'm over here miserable as hell because I'm allowing that to kind of penetrate me. And so I started saying, okay, I want to. And then I started praying, right, for help from above, you know, to get a desire. I didn't even pray to forgive him. I prayed to have the desire to forgive him. That's how low I had to start with that, right? And so I'm like, you know, I talked to God. I'm like, hey, if you're really there, because I think we've all had that combo with God, right? If you're really there,
right.
I need you to help me want to forgive my dad so that I can let this go for me, not for him. And that took a couple years. And I think you're right. I don't think it ever is a total, like, all the way gone thing, you know, because you asked me, you know, you still have years that you don't want to talk to your dad, or moments that trigger certain feelings about being mad. So I think there's still healing going on. But for the most part, I have zero ill will for him, even when I get upset, right? And so I think that process of taking a couple of years of first wanting to forgive him, then, okay, that became a thought, I want to forgive him, and then moving over.
So next, I asked Alan to describe those scenarios, those things that he might have been cheated on, just as a result of having an absent father in his life. Because, as he puts it, he wasn't there for the shit.
He was still like, he'd say, come get us, and he wouldn't show up. Or, you know, just a lot of little things like that, or missing things that were important. You know, you asked one of the things that I might have been cheated on. I remember when I started shaving, you know, men, we all try to start shaving sooner than we, than there's really anything to shave, right? But I remember, I'd gotten some fuzz on my face. I'm like, okay, it's probably time to shave. And I didn't think of ever asking my mom. I mean, she shaved her legs. That's pretty much the same thing, right? There's curves and contours there too, right? She could have taught me. But she wasn't a man. She wasn't my dad, right? So she didn't shave face. So it never crossed my mind to ask her. And I remember trying to get my dad to teach me. And it just never, like, oh, yeah, I'll be there, you know. And I never really told him exactly what I wanted, but I kept telling him, hey, I need to ask you some stuff about growing up. And then, so I shaved the first time. And like anybody who's trying to shave on their own, right? You get these nicks and cuts everywhere. And because you do it wrong, you press too hard and, you know, the whole mix. And, you know, just a few times and I kind of figured it out. Once again, no YouTube for me, right? I think it existed, but I didn't have a computer. and so, you know, I remember that. And I remember one time, this is going back to the forgiveness part. I remember one time yelling that at him. You weren't even there when I learned to shave. That was your job. There's probably a couple F words in there too, but, but you know, this was your job. And he's like, and I said, I know it sounds stupid, but it was really important to me because mostly because you weren't there for the other shit, you know, that's why that little token thing was so important. I probably still would have shaved on my own if he had been there. Right. But because he wasn't, it stood out as something that he should have been there for, or at least should have been able to watch him do every day, right? If that's what he did, because he didn't have a beard, so he shaved every day, right? I should have been able to at least watch him growing up so that I could attempt it better. And all just kind of all that. And it was dumb, right? If you think about that one isolated event, it's a dumb thing to be upset about.
Next, we have a great lesson learned. For any person listening, any person who's struggling with this same exact scenario, anybody who has struggled with it and continues to struggle with it. And then lastly, anyone who's in the stage of forgiving and just needs to hear these words of reinforcement. You got it. Alan's going to share really what has been his tipping point for forgiveness.
You know, it's a little thing, maybe not a dumb thing, but maybe it's a little thing out of all the lessons I should have learned or could have learned from him. But I remember thinking that's so dumb, but I also remember thinking this, it's about a lot more than just the shaving part, right? That represented everything else that I didn't learn, but that was something that I could really vividly bring up, you know? So just kind of a mix of answering your questions in a few different spots, right? But about that is something that I felt cheated out of. I know that one specifically. I felt cheated out of that. I felt like he should have been there to at least coach me through it or something, right? And then just kind of in the choosing to forgive, letting some of those feelings be known also helped, right? It wasn't this pretty thing that God just make things work and butterflies and unicorns, right? It was dirty. It was hard. It was just a lot of emotions, but it allowed me to express those feelings to him so that I could, it was almost kind of like letting it go, right? Yeah. Cause that was part of the time where I was trying to forgive him. And yeah, there was all these little things he was doing that just didn't add up to me needing to forgive him. And I just kept remembering what that teacher said or in that book, both together, because I couldn't be happy if I was harboring all that malice towards somebody. And if I wanted to be happy, what was that?
At the end of the day, being happy and reconciling with the fact that either things are never going to change and you won't have that parent in your life as society prescribes is okay. And Alan just wants to let you know that it is okay and you can forgive. You could still forgive and move on with your life.
Yeah, I couldn't be happy if I was harboring that malice towards somebody else, right? And so I had to forgive him so that I could achieve the goal of being happy for myself. And like that book said, I couldn't, you know, being angry at him was like drinking the poison and wanting him to get sick or die from it, right? It was toxic to me.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so just kind of that mix of stuff is where that led to me trying to forgive him and be happy. And I feel like I've forgiven him in the bulk because I have none of that ill will. But there are still memories that make me upset. Maybe not quite angry. I don't get that fueled like, wow, like I used to. You know, there was times I was so angry, my mom would say, you're that angry, go out and punch the cherry tree. She had a cherry tree out in the back. And she, I would go do it. I was that angry, you know.
Wow. Okay.
And I don't feel any of that anymore, you know. Maybe sad is a better word than angry, you know. So I get sad and I can't call him, right? Or I feel like he doesn't deserve that this year. And it's not anything he did that year, because we're cool now.
But you're making the decision he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, and there's something that I can't figure out what it is sometimes, right? It's just a pain point that comes up, and it's like a flare-up of something, right? It's just a pain point, and it's there. And as much as I say, you know what, he hasn't done anything now, it's like I just can't do it. And so I wait a day, and usually it's just one day, and then we're cool. And then I call him and say, hey, you know, happy Father's Day. Even if it was the day before, right? I got caught up in some stuff, and happy Father's Day. You know, and so that's just kind of where it is.
So in this show, as you know, we celebrate embarrassment in all types of scenarios. And here, I asked Alan to identify those feelings of embarrassment and asked him to elaborate on them and celebrate them now with me, with all my listeners.
One of them was like the scout thing, right, where they take you camping, or they'd have like a father and son camp out. I didn't have a dad, right? We'd still be invited. People would make sure we were invited, and hey, we'll watch over your kid. But it just wasn't, you know. Not until those two guys took us. I think they took us for 2 years, maybe 3 years, me and my brother. And I will forever thank them for that, because it almost felt like I had a dad at that point, you know. I knew it wasn't real, but I could allow myself to kind of think, yeah, Keith's my dad, or Tyler's my dad right now, you know. And so there's that. You know, at schools, they do like the, I don't know what they call them. My kid's school used to do it. It was called Dads and Donuts, Moms and Muffins, you know, stuff like they just, something corny to kind of get you a pastry and come in with your kids.
Right.
And I remember my mom, when she could, for the Dads and Donuts equivalent at, when I was in school, and for my brother too, she would try to take off work or say, I'm going to be in an hour late or whatever, and come in for the dad day. And like, it was a weird mix of emotions, because I was like, my mom's a badass, right? Like, she's in, she's going to take care of it. And then it's, I'm the weird kid with a mom at a dad event, right? Wow. So it was confusing. It was, I think it was more good than bad, but I would be embarrassed. You know, you're a kid, you get embarrassed about dumb shit, right? So I remember being like, my mom's here at the dad event. That's weird. But part of me was like, yes, my mom's here, and I don't have to show up alone to try to snag a donut, right? So, you know, there was just stuff like that, or where people would ask, hey, where's your dad? Or what does your dad do? Or whatever. It's like, you know, I really don't know what my dad does. Why isn't your dad around? And they weren't trying to be mean. It was just, you know, they hadn't experienced it yet, you know. I remember the kids across the street, their dad was there. And I remember in my anger, I was thinking, why do they get their dad and I don't? And I remember thinking, oh, man, they'll never know. Well, a couple of years later, their parents got divorced. And then I almost felt guilty for having that anger, like I wished it on them, right? And I'm like,
right,
did I do that? You know, and you're young and you don't remember, you know, you can't think rationally sometimes, but I'm like, did I kind of wish that on them? Did I? And, you know, obviously as adults, we know there was a lot more going on behind the scenes than what a kid would know. But I remember that feeling as well.
So our parents tend to vent. They tend to share more of the details of the circumstances between your father and your mother. Now, his mother was sick of seeing her kids cry, but she still maintained a cool decorum when it comes to not bad-mouthing his father.
She never really bad-talked him. I would see him fight on the phone and stuff like that. And, hey, you need to come get your kids, too. They want to see you. Not because she was trying to get rid of us. She was sick of seeing us cry, right? And, you know, I just kind of tell us it's okay, you know, or And she bore the brunt of the financial stuff, and she didn't have an education or anything. So she's working low paying jobs, you know, two or three sometimes. And so I know that my brother and I would just sit and cry when my dad said, "Hey, I'll be there at 10 a.m. 10 o'clock rolls by, noon rolls by, 1, 5, and nothing, right? And he just doesn't show up. And she'd say, "Hey, come on, kids." You know, she'd probably, we didn't have a car, so we'd get on the bus. "Let's just go down to, you know, Salt Lake, one of the bigger cities by us, you know, and let's go to the big mall down there and just look at what they have." We did a lot of window shopping. We'd visit things is what we would do. You know, but it took us away from that thought. She would go find places. Like, I don't even think she knew where she was going. She would just hop on a different bus route, so it gave us a different view. And then she'd find a park, because there's parks, you know, you're bound to stumble upon one. She's like, "Oh, there it is, there it is." You know, now as I'm older, she's told me, I had no idea where the hell we were going. I just knew if we crossed the street from where we got off, there's a bus stop to take us back to where we came from, right? And then I could figure it out from the city. And so she would do stuff like that. You know, she would never really, she's like, "It's okay, you know, your dad probably got busy, or your dad this, or, you know, it's okay to be angry." But she wouldn't ever, like, totally just, "That piece of shit," you know, nothing like that. Now that I'm older and I talk to her about stuff like that, sometimes she'll tell me how angry she was. But she did a really great job, at least from my point of view as the kid, to not trash talk him and to not say, "Hey, you know, don't listen to him," or, "You just need to be with me," or whatever, right? She did everything she could to have him be in our lives. He just chose not to for a long time.
You know, mothers or fathers meant more now that we're adults, and they feel like, you know, we understand those untouched topics much better now that we have a worldly view on relationships. So ask Alan to share what his mother disclosed to him and how he manages those conversations.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes, like, "I just don't care, Mom. Like, it's over."
Right, right.
And I don't think she's happy that with that response sometimes, but it works, you know what I mean? And sometimes I'm like, "Yeah, let's hear the scoop on that. Like, what was that? I've always wondered." You know, so I'll dig in. So sometimes it's like I'm all gossipy, like, "Yeah, girlfriend, tell me what's up." And other times I'm like, I just can't. I don't have room for that in my life, you know. But it's just, yeah. So I get a lot more info now as I'm older and as I'm married and stuff.
So absence and death are truly the same. The only difference with that is with death, there is no suffering. And to be in your children's memories tomorrow, you have to be in their lives today. And if that never changes, then you have to move on from the hurt. So I ask Alan to share with listeners how he moved on to forgive.
I would say, I think this stems from choosing to be happy. I'm very happy with the way my life has happened. We talked about some bad stuff with, you know, and some sad things and rough patches, but I don't think, you know, if quote unquote daddy had been home, I don't know that I'd have the same ambition, right? I don't know that I would have a successful business and a successful career the same way that I do now, right? I had to push for that a lot earlier. And so to kind of close it out, I would go back to what that, I call him a mentor, even though he just talked to me every once in a while as a teacher, right? But that mentor, and say, choose to be happy. And with that, take that lesson that I learned, that you, to fully be happy, you need to forgive, even if you never got the apology, because it'll make your life so much better and you don't have to worry about what they're doing. And then if they ever apologize, then gravy, right? It's awesome. But if not, at least you can move forward with what you're doing and not have to hold that in the pit of your stomach, that where you just kind of want bad things for other people. Mm-hmm.
that wraps up another episode of the Keep It 100 Girls show. We celebrate embarrassment and the emotional choices that we make every single day. Women and men share their 50 shades of cray-cray in their life. Every week I reveal our tell-all experiences, aha moments, advice, and lastly, mother friggin' knowledge. We're here to empower each other. I'm here to empower you every week and give you that weekly dose of self-confidence and help you realize your worth. New episodes of the Keep It 100 Girl Show drop every Tuesday on iTunes, Alexa, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. But before you go, give me some love, 100 Tribe. If you like this episode or any other ones, kindly leave me a rating and 5-star review. You know what? I rely on it because it helps me stand out from the crowd and it helps women and even you men out there listening understand us and themselves better. Tune in to the next episode of Flyer Girl Talk. This is where I give you the deets on how to upgrade to business class. I keep it 100. I keep it real. I keep it true. Smooches!